Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who kind of wish they weren't even doing a Star Trek podcast at this point. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
I logged into Canadian and UK iTunes the other day. I can't remember which one it was, but one of them had like two or three really angry reviews about our show.
Really?
We were real assholes for saying that we were embarrassed to like the show and that all we were doing was shitting on it and laughing at our own jokes.
That's pretty accurate, actually.
Yeah, I think that's sort of what we're putting out.
5 stars for accuracy.
And we'll just take the 4 off the top as tax and apply them to your iTunes review.
Well, I don't think anyone from the UK has any standing to criticize anyone else for embarrassing choices. That's for sure.
Speaking of reviews, we're when this episode comes out, based on the rate that people have been going on and reviewing our show, I think we've almost certainly will have crossed the 500 review mark on the U.S. iTunes store.
It's true.
So just want to say, like, this is your last opportunity. I would say at the end of this week, we will close the window for people to get in their screen grabs of their reviews and sending them into drunkshimodaplus@gmail.com. And just one point of clarification, we have to see the review on the iTunes page and not as you're writing it. I know it's easier to take a picture when you're writing it because it doesn't show up immediately, but it'd save us a ton of work if you could just wait to take that screenshot. So,
our basic mission for this podcast was just to save us a bunch of work in general.
Yeah,
like, we have. What's really, the least that we can do?
We've really fucked that up big time. We're like, oh, people like it when we drop in clips. Let's edit tons of clips into the show.
Hey, if you're thinking that you have no chance of winning this t-shirt, I'll have you know that there's probably about 35 entries at this point.
Yeah.
So I think those are pretty good chances.
People have gone real hard on leaving the reviews and left off the part of taking the screenshot and sending it in. So your chances are decent.
Yeah, this is some real pod-on-pod conversation right now that, here's the thing, like, I typically skipped a clip show anyway if I'm just watching it on television, and if you're a podcast consumer, I imagine you're not listening to this show either, so we could do anything.
Yeah, it's like being on stage with nobody in the audience. It's kind of liberating in a weird way.
Yeah, I think we could get really weird with this one. This may work, and it may be a terrible defeat.
Yeah.
This may cancel our show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if the network gets wind of what we're doing here, they might pull our funding.
Yeah.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
So this is episode 22 of season 2, Shades of Grey. the notorious last episode of season two that was really, it was really just a challenge to fans. Like, I dare you to keep liking the show after we do this shit to you.
I had not seen this episode since I was little. And, I mean, its reputation is massive as a towering failure. But as I was watching it, I was surprised at how much meat there was here. Like, you're 20 minutes into the episode before we get our first clip, and that surprised me.
Yeah, I mean,
it appeared that they sort of tried halfway before completely giving up.
Well, I think that the two places that it fails are, one, I don't think that the tracking order of the clips is great.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other is, I feel like the drama between Pulaski and Troy trying to treat Riker really gets repetitive after a while.
Yeah.
And that is kind of a shame. Other than that, like, it's not the worst premise for a clip show. I mean, it's not like they're sitting in the living room of their sitcom house going, "Remember the time," and then just having a random clip from a previous season.
Yeah, there are way worse examples of this format out there. And that was a big surprise to me. Like, they clearly had some budget here to use, because let's just go into the episode, and I think you'll be able to tell where these opportunities are.
So the episode opens up on one of these opportunities, which is an outdoor set. I mean, it's a set, but it's like about as good of a jungle as you're going to get on television.
And it's got running water, which is extremely expensive.
Right. And it's Riker is like sitting on the bank of this creek, and Geordi comes up to him, and Riker's just like, he's just in a mood.
He looks like sad Keanu.
Yeah, he's eating a muffin.
Yeah.
some of the dry muffin falls out of his mouth.
Yeah.
And he's got a big gash in his left ankle. And Geordi does that thing where he like puts on a stance like he's really looking at something. You know when you really look at someone for the first time?
He uses his thumb and pointer finger to like touch the side of his visor, like,
yeah,
like squinting is somehow helping.
Yeah, he's changing the focal distance between the lens and the element.
Yeah,
as we do in filmmaking all the time.
Right.
And so, because Riker has been injured, I guess procedure is to beam him up to sick bay, but the computer is throwing up an error message because it's detecting alien bio in his body. And so the doctor insists on beaming down to check him out before she can sign off on breaking this quarantine procedure that is like the first time we've heard of this, but it seems like a good idea.
Noted transportophobe, Dr. Pulaski mounts the transporter and gets totally O'Brien'd in the process.
I hope these are the right coordinates. Just kidding, Doctor.
Yeah, and she's like, nice job wisecracking on my deepest fear, you fucking prick. And so she beams down, and she does detect that there's something going on in his leg, but she doesn't feel like there's a good enough reason to just leave him to die on this planet.
They've beamed up way more dangerous shit than Riker with a cut on his leg.
Yeah.
Like, without even thinking, they've done that before.
So they beam him up, they take him to sick bay, and he's kind of in, isn't this ridiculous that this is happening to me, emergency room mood. Have you ever been in the ER or like with somebody in the ER that's like this?
Yeah, that seemed a little familiar. He was kind of jaunty about it in the best way.
When we were dating, my wife was cutting an avocado to make herself a salad and got a very bad cut on her finger that she needed to go to the ER for. And when I got there an hour later, like, they let me in, and I just saw her like down the end of a hallway being pushed on a wheelchair, and she saw me and just like laughed hysterically because she was like, you know, embarrassed and trying to, you know, have a good time with this ridiculous situation. And I feel like Frakes, to his credit, really like nailed a real thing that's not the obvious thing.
Your wife was in the avocado ward of Cedar Sinai.
Yeah, actually Beth Israel, but sure. You had the right idea.
Yeah, and I mean, this isn't a surprise to anyone. Like Riker's in great spirits. That's sort of his brand.
Yeah. Riker on brand. So they need to figure out what this thing is, because it's like not a virus and it's not a bacterium, but it is like both.
And it's growing.
Yeah, it's spreading along his neurons, and she can't, there's no operation because whatever the like thing is, it's fusing on a molecular level with the neurons that it's attacking. So
if there's one crewman on this ship whose vascular system it pumps with such efficiency that it could like speed along some sort of molecular invader, it's definitely one Will Riker.
Sure. Yeah, he's lucky it didn't stab him in the dick.
Yeah, that vine could have been more powerful than anyone could imagine.
So to investigate this, Geordi and Data are going to beam down, and they have a little argument in the transporter room about whether Data should just go by himself. And Data, once again, is trying to sacrifice himself on everybody else's behalf. And
this is another opportunity to drop a limb on some planet for Data.
Yeah. Geordi finally talks Data into letting him go, too. They beam down, and they find a vine, and Data's going to grab for it, and he's definitely like, this is limb drop opportunity if ever there's going to be one on this planet. And Geordi's like, careful, Data. And he says,
I'm always careful.
Geordi should have been like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
That should have been the line in the script, right?
It's totally like two guys at a bar, and one of the friends is like, I'm going to have a fifth beer, no problem. I know I have to work tomorrow, but like, fifth drink, it's all good. And Geordi's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You never stop at five.
Yeah. Now they're outside the bar, and he's like, I think I'm going to sit on this guy's motorcycle.
Yeah.
Geordi's like, no!
Yeah, I mean, Geordi's doing his best to be a wingman here, but it doesn't stop Data from grabbing for the vine.
Data is an ugly side when he's drunk. But he grabs it, and it definitely tries to lash out, and they turn it over, and it's got this real gnarly tiger claw of a thorn on it. And Data like wrestles with the vine to keep it still while Geordi excises it with the cutting setting on his dustbuster.
Yeah, and the part about this scene that was hilarious to me is Geordi grabs the thorn with a roach clip. So he grabs the sample. They don't put the sample in anything. He just holds onto it with the roach clip, and then they beam up.
Yeah, he waits. I think he has a little box, but he puts it in the box in the transporter room when they get back into orbit. It's very strange.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's very sound science by either of them at that point.
There are both six beers in, so, you know, in their defense, maybe they're not thinking as straight as they could.
Right. They got to get amped up for their trip down.
He just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic, hypnotic.
So Picard is following the doctor around sick bay and six bay.
Six bay, none the richer.
They're hanging out in six bay, and they kind of keep going back and forth between her office and Riker's bio bed, and the doctor's trying to explain to the captain what's up, what the prognosis is. It's not good. Riker is definitely going to die unless they figure out a way to stop whatever this infection is.
And they aren't even close to that.
Right. They don't know thing one about this. And Picard is, like, stressing. He and Riker have, like, a pretty heartfelt conversation in here. And Picard is, like, really emotional about the fact that his bestie is on the brink. But he asks the doctor if there's anything he can do to help, and she really zings him for being a bald. She says, "You can get out of my hair." And his response is like the only time I've ever heard him use sailor lingo. He goes,
"Aye, aye, doctor."
This is the scene where shit's about to go down.
Yeah.
And it feels like Picard's saying a little bit of a half goodbye without the patient knowing that he's actually saying goodbye at that moment.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
like you never want the person you're visiting in the hospital to know just how dire you believe the situation to be.
Yeah.
So,
although Pulaski is like not afraid of saying that his life is in grave danger around Riker. I mean, she's not holding back.
She's never been known for bedside manner, that's for sure.
Yeah. Picard maybe more so.
Yeah.
This is an episode that made me wonder if it was meant to be more or less in real time. Did you get that? Like, there's no...
Yeah, there was mention that he'd be dead within the hour unless they found a thing, which is a super convenient time frame.
Right, because that's how long an episode of television is meant to transpire over.
Hey, Ben.
Yeah?
Why didn't they just take the leg?
You mean and give him a data leg to substitute?
Or whatever the pirate leg equivalent is in the 24th century. Like, I think they could have saved his life pretty much immediately if they just sawed off the leg, right? And they resorted to some Civil War doctoring?
I don't know. Maybe it was also in his blood system, so it was attacking his neurology more generally.
Yeah.
But specifically, it was making big inroads via the leg. I don't know.
Yeah, as it starts moving toward his groin, I think that that idea flies out the window.
Right. Although they did, I mean, we just found out that the man that got the world's first penis transplant used it to make a baby here in our time. So we would imagine that a penis transplant is no big whoop hundreds of years in the future, right?
Did we just find that out? Is that a thing that we did?
Yeah. Are you saying you didn't find that out?
I don't think that's something I was involved in or read about. But thank you for sharing.
It was a big news article.
I don't read those Reddit threads. r/dicknews.
You got to get on r/dicknews, man.
So one of the drugs that Pulaski pumps him full of is tricordrazine.
Yeah, that's where they take a tricorder and they put it in one of those blenders from YouTube.
That seems like a super unimaginative name for a drug of the future, I thought.
They make a fine powder out of it, and then they macerate it in some ethanol.
If you're having boner problems...
I feel bad for you, son.
Torpedialis might be right for you.
Cool joke, Dad. The infection is advancing, and shit is getting tense. So they wheel over this rig of brain needles, and
it's sort of like you know, like the immobilizing cage. If you have a severe neck injury, they'll put the cage around your head, and they'll actually screw it into your skull. Like that's a modern medical device that I'm sure you're familiar with. This is sort of like the horizontal version of that, if you're laying in a bed the way Riker is.
Yeah. And this fucking thing scared the pants off me when I was a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, the effect is really good of the needles stabbing into his head.
Yeah. They're like maybe like 6 or 8 needles that are meant to be going into his brain.
Yeah.
And so what they're trying to do is stimulate his brain. And the idea is that active neural patterns will resist the virus for some reason.
We aren't meant to understand that.
Yeah. So this has the effect of putting him into a dream state, and so this is our first like kind of cross dissolve as the camera pushes into his face, and we go into Riker's head.
They beam down, and something on the planet's surface has caused the transporter beams to scramble them all over the planet's surface. So Riker finds himself totally alone on the surface of the planet, and there's this very weird scene where he like goes out onto a cliff and yells,
"Anybody!"
He then just turns and walks away from the cliff and finds everybody in the other direction.
Like, he basically does that thing where he screams into a thunderstorm. Also, major props to the set dressing department breaking out the dry ice in a real yeah, big time way.
Totally. I think it's the first kind of primitive or undeveloped planet surface that we see in the whole series. So this is the unveiling of the like styrofoam rocks and and very close up psych that become kind of watchwords of exterior set design in Star Trek: The Next Generation.
That's our first clip, everybody.
Yeah, should we maybe intro how we're going to do this from here on out?
I guess, yeah.
Because I thought you were talking. It was very disorienting for me.
Yeah, so we thought we would, rather than play the clips that they play, we would play the clips in which we talk about the clips that they play in the clip show. So this is our meta clip show.
We should drop in the drop of Data talking about how to strategize against Riker in that War Games episode.
Knowing that he knows that we know that he knows, he might choose to return to his usual pattern.
Wait. You're overanalyzing Data.
Because this is the Mobius strip of Greatest Gen episodes right here.
Fair enough.
We need a transition sound too, don't we?
Yeah, it could be this. Although that's sort of the sound effect of Greatest Gen Con 2017.
Yeah, that...
Sorry, that just happens automatically every time.
That's definitely that. The brand of Greatest Gen Con 2017.
I think we're in complete agreement on that. yeah, we could use the
we are hemorrhaging listeners right now.
we could use that that Wayne's World sound effect that I used on an episode a few weeks ago where they go.
Let's do that. That'll work.
Okay.
So one of the first memories that Riker gets is his first meeting with Data. And that, of course, comes from the first episode of the show. We have a couple of favorite parts from our first episode of the podcast, which I think we're going to play for you now. And for some reason, Picard big dogs him into doing it manually, whatever that means.
Right.
We soon find out that reconnecting the saucer and star drive section manually involves just telling O'Brien and Data how fast to go and at what angle to approach. It's the most low stakes manual way of doing things ever. And when he does it successfully, everyone like turns around and looks at him admiringly, like, "Oh my God, you're." Your instructions were so clear.
He told us to turn 3 degrees to the left like a pro, like a fucking pro.
Oh, man. Like, just further establishing, like, you know, Picard might be big-dogging him right now, but, like, we know who the swinging dick of the bridge crew is, and it's definitely Riker William T.
Right. There's then a scene where Picard and Riker meeting up in the observation lounge, and Picard continues to like really be a shithead to Riker about this issue of the captain not going on away missions, which is basically just a scene to establish that, unlike the original series, the captain will not be constantly in needless harm. And then they also like plant that Picard hates children in this scene.
Ben, I've got to ask you something before we get off this scene that has just, I can't get it out of my head. I'm going to ask you a question and then I'm going to support the statement, all right?
Okay.
Does Riker have any reason to believe that Picard is not a pedophile based on what he tells him in that room? Because the way he says it...
Starfleet has given me a ship with children aboard. Yes, sir. And I don't feel comfortable with children.
And the way he acts towards Wesley when he finally goes into the bridge later, do you remember what he says?
I knew your father, Wesley.
It's a classic get in the van line. It's, hey, boy, I know your father. Yeah. It's okay.
Want to look around?
I mean, pretty messed up. And if you were interviewing for a job, Ben, and like upon getting that job, your new boss,
the boss
is like,
stood
oh, yeah.
staring out the window saying,
I don't feel comfortable with children.
How is that not a classic, I'm a pedophile, but I don't want to tell you I'm a pedophile sort of move?
It is a full-blown classic, I'm a pedophile move. And boy, it's given me a lot to think about.
What a beautiful memory, Adam.
Yeah, it's really great how early we ruined the show for a lot of people. Like, right out of the gates. And that would be a recurring bit that we would go back to again and again.
Yeah, that's really the joke that keeps on joking.
Yeah, everyone feels good about that joke.
Yeah, well.
That joke hasn't caused us drama in the least.
I still think it's really funny.
Yeah, me too.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurses the disease.
So this is not helping Riker's situation at all. Oh no, I guess it's helping a little bit, but they decided to like tweak it up or whatever.
So, and what's happening here is Pulaski's sort of running the ones and the twos, like, working the mixture of the drugs, and Troy is there to sort
Troy's
of interpret...
on the mic kicking the rhymes?
Yeah, exactly. She's there to sort of interpret what's happening inside his head, because there's no way for Pulaski to know what's happening there without Troy. So she's sort of interpreting what the drugs are doing to his mind.
Right.
And that's sort of a fun interplay, I guess.
Yeah, Troy can kind of report back to Pulaski, what kinds of dreams Riker is having. And as they work through this, they work out that, one kind of dream is...
wet.
Super unhelpful, and one kind of dream is more helpful. The super unhelpful kind are the boner dreams, I will call them. And they start rather delightfully with him trying to kick it to Guinan. Riker and Guinan put on a little play acting scene in 10 Forward where Riker puts the smarmiest, most lecherous moves on Guinan that I think we maybe ever see in the whole series. Like this might be the defining moment for Riker's character as somebody who claims to be able to smooth-talk women, and what he does when we actually see him in action is so fucking horrible.
I love this scene so much. It was like watching two champion tennis players just rally for 5 minutes. Like, they are just shooting dialogue back and forth in, such a charismatic way. I dug it. I was not creeped out by it at all. I thought it was hilarious.
Well, here's the question, and I sort of in retrospect thought about it in a different way. What is your read on what they are doing? Are they A, doing an honest depiction of what it is like when the two of them are in a bar looking to pick somebody up, or B, were they kind of putting one over on Wesley and playing a practical joke on him? This is how you pick up women.
But you're inviting me in.
I'm not sending you away.
That's more than I expected.
Is it as much as you hoped?
To hope is to recognize the possibility. I had only dreams.
Dreams can be dangerous.
Not these dreams. I dream of a galaxy where your eyes are the stars and the universe worships the night.
I absolutely believe it was B. They are enjoying it so much.
Yeah.
That they could only be making fun of Wesley to his face. Because, look, what Wesley's asking for isn't something that anyone else can give him. There's no such thing as credible relationship advice when you're 16 years old or whatever.
Right.
You go out there and you get your heart broken a bunch, and that's how it happens.
Right, and everybody tells you, oh, this is going to suck, and you're like, and then you go and find out it really sucks.
Yeah, and I think that's I think that's their way of dealing with Wesley's request, rather than giving him like the adult truth, which is, yeah, you just sort of get your reps and you figure out who you are and then you figure out who someone else is and maybe it works and maybe it doesn't. Like, that is not as satisfying as play acting a non-sex introduction to like a Cinemax movie. Like, like, it was so great. And like, I feel like both actors, I feel like Frakes and Goldberg in this scene, like, they let the mask slip just a little bit. Like,
yeah.
I feel like you're seeing some real joy from them in this scene in a way that you don't see it in many other parts of the show. Like, I would have loved to hear the oral history of this scene.
I would have loved to just walk past Frakes' star wagon after they finish shooting it and watch it bounce up and down on the suspension.
So squeaky.
If this trailer's rocking, don't come a knocking.
Oh man,
good times.
God, you know, if we're getting dinged for being a show that laughs at our own jokes, this is the most this is the most concentrated version of that form.
I mean,
this is the good stuff right here.
This is the this is the rarefied joke laughing at.
This is the uncut joke dope.
This is us really delivering on the promise of our show, thinking we're real swell.
This is joke masturbation.
Yeah. I mean, the story with Shades of Grey is that they're saving money, right?
That's what we're told, but is that revisionist history?
I think I read that, like, the Borgs episode and one of the other ones from this season, they kind of let rip, and by the time they were at the end of the season, they were like, fuck, we don't have any toe left. We got to do something cheap.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like the opposite of what's happening to us here, because we spent a lot of time preparing this, and you are right to observe that it's a pretty masturbatory exercise.
Very true.
Should we get on to the next clip?
Yeah, the fourth clip in this first section is an emotional goodbye scene between Riker and Troy. But viewers of our podcast might also remember this episode for a really fun scene involving Worf and some pain sticks.
Worf's bar mitzvah is—it involves him walking down this central channel as the Klingon warriors standing above him hit him with the pain sticks.
I travel the river of blood.
We just got an email from a listener who found his Worf toy from when he was a kid. Like, the Worf action figure included some pain sticks. And he took a picture of these, and they're just, like, comically dildonic looking in the Kenner plastic representation of them.
There is no other thing they could be besides giant dildos.
Like they must have, like, repurposed them from some hentai action figure from Japan, right? You know? Like, they're like, oh, we got a bunch of purple dildos that scale to being about 4 feet long. What are we going to do with them? I don't know. Throw them in with the Worf toys and make them pain sticks or something.
Oh, man. And this, he sets it up in a little diorama where it's, like, Worf and Riker, and they're both staring at each other holding these giant dildos. It's kind of a perfect scene.
Yeah, it's like Worf and Riker have made one holodeck program that they can both really get into.
Imagine the scenes you could act out with those figures and those props.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
So he just walks down the middle of this channel and gets pain stickified and yells a lot of shit in English and Klingon.
The fire of the vanquish blows over my hands.
Oh, man. I'm sure you're really going to enjoy editing this one. Just us laughing at our own shit.
In faith, I do not love thee. With mine eyes, they be a thousand heresy, but 'tis my heart.
This is the point in the episode where they realize that the memories they're playing are a little too benign, and they decide to turn the settings up to 6.
Yeah. Which is a funny thing to see Troy reacting to. She's like, oh, I'm used to this not just being a mental simulation.
I think when you think of sexy Star Trek episodes, there's none sexier than Season 2, Episode 8, Justice. That's not Season 2, is it?
Yeah, I think it's Season 1.
We should talk about how these aliens look, these Edo. Like, these
yeah,
are not,
we should.
These are not fish people.
No.
These are not dog people.
They're described as almost identical to us, I think, in the beginning of the episode. So they're, and they are all blonde. So it's like kind of a Aryan master race of aliens. The women all have curly hair, and the dudes all have just kind of like 80s blonde dude haircuts. But they all are basically wearing like handkerchiefs that have been tied together strategically to hang off of their bodies.
Yeah.
Just so.
Like if you were going to sit on any of the furniture, I think you'd want to put something down first. That's the level of coverage we're talking about.
Yeah. This is a level of coverage where like if this was a main cast character on any TV show at any point, if they got as naked as these people are, it would be like a very sexy moment in a television series. But these people are all just kind of running around like this. That's their normal way of life. They have a very hedonistic lifestyle.
They all look like Cinemax adult film stars. Like,
oh yeah, they definitely like there's a lot of
good looking enough that they're like on the line of severe looking.
Yeah,
you know?
There's a lot of early 80s era boob jobs on display.
A lot of Tori Spelling level boob jobs, I would say.
It's like it's sort of like any like CG alien in a film in the like post Jurassic Park but pre I don't know like Avatar era, where it's like I can see where you're going with this boob job, but it's not quite plausible.
It's like a weird combination of like Hitler's Final Solution fantasy and like late night softcore pornography.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's real weird. But everyone seems real nice. Like, that's another part of it. It's not like they look like they're filthy porn stars, but they are like sexy Mormons. They're really they're really nice and innocent sounding, and there isn't that undercurrent of filth that you might associate with
it's not
with how we're describing them.
Yeah
they aren't dressed to fight.
The number of moose knuckles on the dudes in this episode is like is so fucking upsetting. Like it's like almost all you can focus on is just like, wow, like you can really see like the outline of the tip of his dick
right
in this costume.
Yeah, it's like so much putty.
Yeah. Well, that inspired a very negative review on iTunes, and I don't think we could really play the Moose Nut clip without playing this following clip.
Sure.
Priority 1 message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Hey, this is Adam and Ben with a special message for you. I think, first of all, we just want to thank everyone for all of the nice reviews we've received over the last week especially. But something was brought to our attention, Ben, and I think you're the best person to address it.
I'm very upset about this, Adam. Some person has gone on iTunes and left a review that takes exception to our usage of the term moose knuckle in the episode about the Edo, in which Wesley is running around with the kids and falls into the flower patch and is nearly put to death over it.
Let me read to you the message, Ben, that we got on our iTunes review. Subject line, moose knuckle, 1 star, by Jimbo925. Hey Beavis and Butthead, moose knuckle is used for a woman's private parts, not a man's. Think about it.
I really don't agree with that. I think that if anything, moose knuckle refers to
any situation in which pants are bunched up around genitalia in an amusing way. And if you go on Urban Dictionary, I feel like that corroborates what I feel about the term.
I mean, yeah, you actually have an Urban Dictionary account. Like, you actually have to log into Urban Dictionary. That's how into it you are.
I just feel like this is a huge miscarriage of justice, and I just don't think that we should have to suffer this one-star review because some idiot doesn't like our usage of the term moose knuckle. In many ways, it's my favorite review we've ever gotten, but I don't like that it's only one star. All right? The only way I can see to claw back at some justice for us is if everybody listening right now goes to iTunes and leaves a nice 5-star review to bury this, essentially.
Yeah, let's hold it underwater until the bubbles stop.
Yeah, and go ahead and go find that review, and it asks if the review was helpful. Click no, and report a concern. If anybody is rocking Nuck, it's this guy.
Yeah, exactly. So let's get this thing wiped off the page. I think it's a bunch of bullcrap.
Do the right thing, listener. Go to iTunes, help the greatest generation right this horrible, horrible wrong.
So it was written, and so it was done.
Yeah. That was the first time that I felt like people were really on our side with this show. Because, you know, we did take a lot of shit early on, especially, like, in various comment sections about not being real Star Trek fans because we were expressing times we felt ashamed or embarrassed about our show or our fan relationship with Star Trek. And, our listeners really came through for us in a huge way. It was so awesome.
I think that was the first time we really felt the awesome power of our listenership and the responsibility we have to wield it responsibly.
Yeah.
Because we blew that review off of the internet. Like, it no longer exists. And the guy actually wrote to apologize, which was great.
Yeah. In many ways, that guy gave us a beautiful, beautiful gift that day. What's next for Riker's porno dreams?
So second up is a reference to the time that the Enterprise got jacked by the Bynars. This episode also featured the character of Minuet.
What a babe. Not many of the crews left aboard. They've all kind of gone onto the starbase, and Riker and Captain Picard and just the skeleton are all kind of like engaging in some leisure activities, and you know, of course Riker is going to go check out the holodeck if he has some time off.
It's like when the parents leave the house, you know, to a teenager, all of a sudden, like, holy shit, I've got all this beer, I've got the parents' liquor cabinet. And and I have all this time to masturbate.
Right. Yeah, the odds of somebody walking in on me while I'm in the holodeck have dropped through the floor, and that's about as good as it gets. But he gets down to the holodeck, and there are a couple of Bynars working outside it, and so he has to call up a program under observation by strangers, which I feel like really limits the kind of creative license that he would otherwise take.
You can see him like sort of searching his brain like improvisationally, like New Orleans, jazz club.
That seems innocuous enough. So he calls up a jazz club, calls up an audience and a combo up on stage with a trombone for himself, or as he calls it,
piano, bass, and drums, and a bone for me.
The computer's got to be so confused at that request in that moment. Like,
yeah.
Contextual error. Please re-request.
Yeah. They had to cut this for syndication, but originally a huge dildo materializes on stage, and he goes, no, I'm not that kind of bone.
I'll be providing the bone around here.
Now I'll need someone to play with.
He doesn't want it to be crowded, so he has the computer dial it back so that there's just one super hot blonde babe in a red dress, and then he says, blondes and jazz seldom go together. So the blonde disappears, and a redhead appears at a different table. He's pretty pleased with that, but
decides to dial it into a more sultry woman.
My name is Minuet, and I love all jazz, except Dixieland.
Why not Dixieland?
You can't dance to it.
My girl.
Boy, is she easy on the eyes.
He could have just told the computer, I want a girl that looks like one of the mobster's wives from Goodfellas. And and could have saved himself a bunch of the request time there.
Oh, man. Really brings back memories, Adam.
You know what's great about Shades of Grey is that they show the passage of time in terms of like how much sweat is on Riker's body as the episode progresses. Did you notice that? Like, so yeah. They've got Riker up on the table and he's covered in a sheet, a sequined future sheet.
Yeah.
And like they've got
the only kind of sheets you got in space.
They got it pulled down a little bit to reveal his prodigious chest hair, and they've like squirt bottled the shit out of him at this point. Like, he's getting sweatier and sweatier as he begins thinking more and more about all the space chicks he's banged. And one of the scenes they show is when he bangs Sarah Connor from the Terminator 2 franchise on the Angel 1 planet. One of the most fun scenes in the whole episode is he sets up a meeting with Sarah Connor, and Sarah has some clothes sent to him. So Riker's in the little condo with Troy and Tasha, and they're like, you're not going to wear this, are you? And Riker's like, of course. Yeah. Of course, I do this all the time. I was on that one planet wearing feathers, and I was on that other planet wearing, like, spiky shoulder pads. Like, he like, lists off all these examples of times where he's worn crazy shit.
You're not going to wear that.
Of course. Part of this mission is diplomatic. I have requested an audience with the head of state, and I will honor her by wearing indigenous apparel.
I don't believe this. You're going to put that thing on and parade around like one of them?
Why, what is this attitude? On Kibatris, I had to wear furs to meet with the leadership council. And on Armist 9, I wore feathers.
So he ducks behind the partition, puts on the costume, and it is like, it is awesome. It's a plunging V that would make the American Apparel people blush. Like, it V's it V's all the way down to the crotch, and then it's
patterns
sort of,
and colors that would make them very excited.
Yeah. It exposes just the left nipple.
Yeah.
And boy, like, as
prodigious
as a man who cannot grow a beard, I see how hairy one Commander Riker is, and I'm like, God, I just wish I could do that. Like, very envious of that going on. So he's like, don't worry. I've got this cool costume and a meeting set up. I'm going to keep it professional. So he goes out to hang with Sarah Connor, who, like, immediately puts the moves on him, like, in a pretty evident, like, shit's going to go down, right?
Yeah.
They lay on the bed. They're talking together. Riker actually calls what he's doing diplomatic relations, which is great. Like, it's almost like smile and wink at the camera before turning back to Sarah Connor and making out. And they do one of the classic Naked Gun transitions. Like, they don't dissolve to an oil derrick pumping, but
or
they,
a train going into a tunnel.
But they do like a 2 second, like a full 2 second dissolve to a campfire while we're back with the Ramses character.
Yeah.
Oh, that was really nice. I enjoyed that scene quite a bit.
Listening back to this, we've made fun of the show a lot for doing retreads of prior concepts, and I'm realizing that we do that so much more than the show.
We're the worst offender.
Seriously. Next clip, Space Irish. But they do get down. Like, this this really does cut to a train entering a tunnel and an oil derrick pumping. Like,
yeah.
It's pretty hot and heavy between them.
Yeah, Riker wants to give her a tour. And I think we all know what that's code for. A tour of his dick. Yeah, and balls.
Man.
Boy, it's like you knew that clip was coming.
I didn't know what we said in it, but I was just thinking you had said prodigious chest hair in the process of setting that clip up.
I know.
Crazy.
I am Locutus aboard. You will respond to my questions. I am Locutus aboard. You are bored.
Troy and Pulaski realized that making Riker want to fuck is making things worse for everyone.
It's making the virus grow in addition to everything else.
So they need to remodulate what they're doing to his brain to send his emotional state in the opposite direction, on the logic that maybe that will turn this thing around. So the first thing that he starts dreaming about when they do this is our farewell episode to Tasha Yar.
I think we both agree that the character of Tasha Yar has had many highlights in her career on the Enterprise. Unforgettable highlights from a fully developed character, I would say.
Absolutely.
I took the liberty of putting together an in memoriam reel of some of her greatest moments. And
oh, really?
Yeah. I think sort of like the Academy Awards in memoriam montage. I think it's only right that we take a moment and remember our fallen bridge officer, Tasha Yar.
I don't believe this. You're going to put that thing on and parade around like one of them? I'm in a penalty box. Data, you are fully functional, aren't you?
Of course, but...
How fully? It doesn't feel artificial until the drug wears off. Then you pay the price. She's dead.
Oh.
I feel like I really came into my own as an editor of this podcast on that episode.
Yeah, that was sort of the baby episode of this episode, which is proving to be a real Armus of an episode.
The thing that kills everything good about the show.
Yeah.
So the memories continue to skew negatively as...
Yeah. And you would think that Yar buying the farm would be the most negative thing, but it's not. It's not even close, I guess.
Yeah, what could be more negative than a fellow bridge officer and friend dying in the line of duty? Of course, it's Troy getting pregnant. Deanna's pregnant. And then it's dun-dun-dun music.
Yeah, and then...
What follows is the most awkward pregnancy McLaughlin group ever.
Issue one.
We're in the conference room with all of the bridge crew, and... Off by yourself is Deanna Troi sitting at the very other end of the table. And what we get here is a really skin-crawly conversation about what they should do with the pregnancy.
It's like all the dudes on the ship suddenly think that it's their place to weigh in. And, you know, they sort of line up along very predictable character lines. Worf is like, kill it now, kill it with fire.
Worf wants to basically like drop her off at Kaiser. He is like so stone cold about this.
Yeah, yeah. Don't date Worf if you're 16, ladies. Once they sort of get some encouraging results with this, they start to really like dial it up to 11, right?
Yeah, I mean, if being sad is driving this virus towards slowing its growth, what would anger do? And that's where they start showing some clips of some ass kicking, both received and given.
Pretty early in his appearance on the Klingon ship, the second officer Clagg is really starting to kind of test Riker's boundaries and test his commitment to the challenge he has taken up, and. It winds up being that Riker has to like sucker punch him and knock him to the floor in order to like get him to shut the fuck up and leave him alone.
He does that thing where he like accepts an insult, like averts his eyes for a moment, and then like beats his ass.
Yeah,
which is sort of like I'm a little surprised that isn't such an obvious telegraph of what's about to happen, right?
Yeah, you would think a Klingon probably would never like faint away from a fight.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a total new one on Clagg. Like he's never seen this particular stunt pulled in any bar fight.
Yeah, Riker basically acts like he gets the vapors and then like stiffens up and kicks the shit out of him.
And
he really like
fun little
Ric Flairs him.
Yeah, I think Jonathan Frakes is starting to demonstrate himself to be like he can really sell a fight.
Yeah, a couple times this season they've given him like compound fight scenes with like multiple moves. Like the guy can do it.
And it wouldn't be an episode in which we're talking about fight scenes if somebody didn't go through a glass table.
Riker shows Quinn to his quarters, and I think he asks him about what is in his trapper keeper. And Quinn's like, oh, this was actually for the doctor, but, you know, we can make I could show you. It's actually a superior life form. And Riker's like, what do you mean superior life form?
And Quinn's like, let me show you.
Yeah. Zip.
Yeah, he opens up the Trapper Keeper with that Velcro sound, that...
Yeah. So Riker's like, you're acting real weird. And he tries to leave, and Quinn's like...
It won't like your science, officer. It does like you.
And quickly starts to... put a whoop on Riker. I think Riker tries to throw the first punch, but Quinn just throws like one of the greatest roundhouse kicks of all time.
This fight scene is so great because they don't even try to obscure that they're stuntmen.
No, yeah, this is definitely the same guy that they use when Data is dodging lasers, like just with,
so awesome.
with gray hair instead of green tan.
Just an ill-fitting wig,
yeah,
an ill-fitting uniform, and a bunch like, of axe kicks.
Yeah, he's like about 60 or 75 pounds lighter than Ward Costello, the actor that's portraying Quinn, but...
God, and Riker just gets the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah, he really earns the nickname Gregory Roundhouse Quinn.
I miss Gregory Quinn.
Yeah, me too.
You think he's still an admiral? We haven't seen him since then.
I hope so. I like to imagine that they sort of demoted him into a desk job somewhere where he can't hurt anyone.
Commandant at the academy.
Yeah.
I am the cutest of all. Lock faces on that vessel. I am the cutest of all.
They're really getting some positive feedback from all of these negative emotions. So they very quickly go into all of the memories that Riker has of him getting his ass kicked and nearly dying. And there are several.
like this one from Symbiosis.
In the last episode, he gets encased in that... in that clear shield that Echo Papa 607 shoots at him. And then this time around, T-John gets him in the iron claw, the electrical claw, and holds him hostage.
Yeah. It's just, this man will die if you don't give me my drugs. And Picard's like, nah, you're not going to kill him. You're not a killer.
So Frakes, listen. You remember that last episode where you just stood really still and you had that scared look on your face? We need exactly the same thing this time around. Can you do it?
We also got to revisit the really weird episode where we meet the Ferengi.
The surface is covered in these crazy crystal structures, and the crystals are the reason that energy is being dissipated and absorbed by the planet. When the Ferengi away team starts attacking them by flinging lightning bolts out of these crazy blue whips.
Yeah, if there's one like style of weapon that you want, you know, for aiming at someone far away, you definitely want its method of discharge to be like whipping it around your head and sort of snapping it across yourself.
Yeah.
Super accurate from the 50 yards that they were shooting them.
Well, maybe on Ferenginar they train them from youths, you know? You're learning your rules of acquisition and you're learning your whip skizzles.
Maybe the most disgusting scene of the selection is definitely when Armus drowns Riker in his pool of blackness. Riker's talking shit to Armus. He's really, like... he's not playing his games anymore. He's ready to show him who's boss. But Armus turns the table on him pretty hardcore by dragging him into his goo.
Yep.
It is something godly!
Touch him and he dies.
No!
this is a really intense scene. It's like Riker gets pulled in and like we see all of his body and then just his hand sink into the goo, which is an awesome effect. It's so scary looking. Like to think about being submerged in oil like that. Like I have no idea how they shot that, you know?
You see his face and his eyes and his mouth are open, and that's the scariest part. Like the idea of the goo just going in your mouth like that. Ugh. Like gross. I'm trying to imagine what it's like as an actor to like read ahead on the script and go, holy shit, like I'm going to have to take a dip in some goo on a couple of these shooting days.
I'm going to have to be full body submerged in glop.
I read in the production notes that Frakes gets pulled into the pool and then he gets completely submerged, but they surface a plaster resin head modeled on Jonathan Frakes' face. And so they sort of push that up through and then drag it back down. So that's the effect that we see in the cut to close up. It really works great. It works so much better than any other effect in this show.
Yeah.
Because it's practical, right? Go figure. Like
I worked as the camera guy on a music video one time where we were using some black goo and it was like coming out of a character's mouth, and it was really like deeply upsetting, even, you know, when I was there when they were like mixing it, and there's something so fucking upsetting about what that looks like.
Yeah, there's something instinctual about that color coming out of a person or a person being covered in that color.
Because it's so unnatural. Like, it's this otherness.
Yeah, but Frakes just fucking goes for it. Like, he's dragged into the pool, he's screaming his head off, and he gets submerged. And he gets real dirty.
Yeah. Riker finally knows what it's like to be on the receiving end of being drenched in goo.
That was a world-class button right there.
Yeah, that was... I thought about cutting that clip a little shorter, but I felt like it would be a shame to leave that bit off.
You couldn't fully release until you got the end of that bit.
So proving that Riker is a mind and not just a set of nervous reactions, one of the scariest things he's had to do is set the self-destruct on the ship, which is a pretty abstract fear, I feel like. It's not like being dragged by a creepy alien, but that's the next clip.
We're going to set this shit to self-destruct and then see what's going on. So they go down to engineering, and it turns out setting self-destruct is much easier than I remembered. I thought that they were going to have to like put in a bunch of codes and stuff, but it's literally like they stand on either side of the engineering console and Picard says, set the ship to self-destruct. And the computer asks Riker if he's down with that. And he's like, yep. And then that's it. They don't have to put in Omega 01.
It's easier to launch nuclear missiles in Crimson Tide than it is to destroy a starship in the future.
Man. I just think about the self-destruct scene in whichever of the movies that is. I guess that's... is that Star Trek 3, maybe?
Yeah.
Where they blow up all the Klingons. So much better. And that's Star Trek 3. That's a bad movie.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I guess the Federation learned some things from that experience, mostly that they need to make it easier to blow up a ship.
Smooth things out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the last and most scary scene that Riker fully experiences is from the episode Heart of Glory.
What they come to find is a crew of three Klingons, one of whom is severely wounded, and as they find them, the reactor on the ship starts to go critical. There's a pretty tense moment where Yar runs down to the transporter room to try and beam them off the ship, and you sort of wonder if it was so important for her to be on the bridge before, why she's now in the transporter room when they have people who have the title transporter chief
right
on board the ship. But she is just barely able to get them off this ship before it goes ballistic.
Well, I mean, we see the ship explode.
Right.
And then a couple seconds later, we're going to expect like her to beam in a bunch of like wet red mist under the transporter pad. But luckily, she's able to capture them and bring them home.
Yeah, there's a there's an abortive attempt where she runs the transporter and it can't quite get a lock. So it was real touch and go there.
I think that after this, they just show like a bunch of shots of different phaser shooting and punching and exploding and whatnot, but it's never like a long enough clip to have something to say about it.
Yeah, they throw a montage here toward the end when things are getting at their worst, and it's basically shooting phasers, people getting punched and kicked, and every ship that they've blown up on the show so far, they show blowing up, which is kind of more than I remember.
Yeah, I mean, when you compress the like 40 whatever episodes that we've watched, it does seem like there has been a lot of action, when in fact there has not.
Right.
One thing I really respected about Troy in this episode is when Riker was having all his boner memories, none of them centered around her.
Yeah.
And she didn't like take that too personal.
No, I think she's realistic. She knows she knows Riker's a man about town, or a man about the galaxy.
The man about the holodeck?
Yeah. She's not going to change him.
Well, anyways, we've probably spent enough time talking about this fucking episode. So we should just get to Riker being saved.
Yeah, it's the montage that finally drives the virus from his body.
you're going to need a montage if you get sick.
Sure. So he's safe but sweaty at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's clearly woken up, but they don't know how much of his consciousness is intact. So as they start to, like, you know, hold up fingers and ask him questions, Picard and Data walk in and they say, "Do you know who you are?" And he says, "Of course I do. I'm Captain Jean-Luc Picard." And that is... That's the slide whistle for the end of the second season.
Yeah, it's like they wanted to take their viewership and totally de-escalate how excited they might be in seeing a season 3.
Right.
Like, let's set some expectations here, you guys.
Right, which is ironic because season 3 really sort of picks up on the promise of some of the better episodes of this season, I think.
Yeah, it's a real head fake.
Yeah, it's like Neon Dion making you think he's going to go one way. That's the end of the episode. Did you have any other... I mean, not that there were any scenes that we didn't talk about extensively, but did you have anything else you wanted to talk about?
No. Did you, Ben, manage somehow to find yourself a drunk Shimoda in this clip show?
Ooh, is not the smartest one. Smartest one. Let the boy take over control. Shimoda! Ooh, you make the warp drive hum. Warp drive hum. You gave up the ship to a child, Shimoda. Drunk Shimoda. Take important stuff, stack it up. Doesn't give a fuck, everybody's drunk. And Tasha Yar's getting robot humped. Ben. No! Drunk Shimoda. Drunk Shimoda.
I think I have to give it to us on this one. I think we get the drunk Shimoda here because we did a ton of work digging through old episodes to find the right clips to play and didn't really do the math on what a long, drawn-out, self-congratulatory exercise this would wind up looking like. And I'm a little bit embarrassed at the moment. I'm a lot embarrassed.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best we can hope for is that everyone who enjoys our show skips this episode and doesn't hold it against us.
Yeah.
We produced this episode with a large amount of help from our listenership, actually, who like posted to Reddit and replied on Twitter with some ideas of some clips to use. So,
yeah, we really appreciate the help. I think that we would especially have appreciated if somebody had just said, "That's a terrible idea. Don't do that."
Yeah, just skip it. Don't do it. Yeah. Where were you guys then?
Yeah.
My Shimoda, God, I hate to do this, but it's got to go to Rob Bowman. but here's the reason. Like, I think we've referred to his comments about this episode as not being as negative as they really could have and should have been.
Right.
Why didn't he go Alan Smithy on this episode? I totally would have. Alan Smithy exists for this very reason.
Explain.
Alan Smithy is the pseudonym for embarrassed directors. It's the name that is chosen by either directors who have seen a project through to the end and then have seen its final result and decided to unattach their name from it.
Right.
Or they leave in mid-production and then have a rando direct the end of it, and then they just use Alan Smithy as a name to ascribe to that duty, the director duty. So
yeah, I guess I've heard of that in the context of feature films, but I don't know if I've ever heard of it for a television episode. Maybe the guild rules are different?
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like if there was ever a time to do that for television, it would be this one.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I gotta tip my hat to Rob for, like, he stayed the course, and he still, like, he made an episode around this. Like, there's real connective tissue here, and it was not as bad as I remember it being.
Yeah, I think it's a more sincere take on a clip show than almost any clip show that has ever been done. And I would even say that like the performances that he gets out of Frakes and Marina Sirtis and Sirtis or Sirtis, I never know, and Diana Muldaur even are all really kind of on point. Like,
yeah, it's like no one told them that this was a clip show, and they still gave it their 100, which was admirable.
Yeah.
Yarmouk and Jalad at Tanagra.
Personal grooming is less about something I do for myself, even though there are myriad reasons for that, and more about my consideration for other people who have to look at me, be around me, and on special occasions, love me physically. And when it's clear my front and backyards are becoming overgrown and unsightly, I'll break out the mower, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra from Manscaped. This Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is really something else. This trimmer features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Listen, spring cleaning doesn't just apply to your nether regions. Get the full grooming experience with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit and Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants, right? We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that, being ourselves in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one size fits all on a social media platform. Or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners. We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you want to play more clips in this episode, or did you want to go ahead and end it?
I think we should... I was going to say quit while we were ahead, but that's totally inaccurate. I think we should let people get on with their miserable lives and move on to the end of the episode.
Move on to season three. How about that? We made it through the first two seasons somehow.
The next episode is episode one of season three, Evolution. The crew fights for survival when a mysterious force attacks their ship's life support systems. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
Not at all. At all. Not one bit.
Well, I remember it's got a lot of Wesley Crusher, the boy, in it. I can't quite remember if this is... Is this the Nanites episode, maybe?
Is it?
I think it might be. Maybe not. Maybe it's something that they like pick up out of a star trail or something like that. But I feel like it might be the Nanites episode.
It's a Winrich Colby episode, which may or may not have anything to do with its quality. We know him as the director of the season finale and like about a dozen other episodes.
Yeah. What does the critical response have to say?
One reviewer wrote, "There's nothing actively wrong with this episode, but nothing that really stands out about it either." Oh, great. You really want to come out of the blocks on a new season with like
an episode. A solid 3 out of 5 stars.
Yeah, just a real C-plus episode. That's great.
Would you use a newly reinstated veto?
Oh, I just felt the tingle of my veto powers return. We got to see the first episode of a season.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to watch it. I'm excited to get out of season two and hopefully into some better episodes. And certainly there will be better episodes of our podcast to come. That's for sure.
Yeah, it'll be hard not to make an episode that's better than this one.
There is no one listening right now. Do you feel... little bit of freedom about that? You could say anything, Ben.
Yeah.
Will care.
We could close the show without even thanking Dark Materia for our music, and nobody would know.
We could close the show by saying that no one could talk to us on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen.
And nobody could follow you at CutForTime or me at BenjaminRAHR.
Nope, there's nothing to talk about on Reddit at either R Maximum Fun or our greatest gen. There's nothing to talk about here. Move along.
There's no reason to log on to the Facebook group, Greatest Generation.
There is no reason anyone should help support our show by going to MaximumFun.org/donate. Like, this probably encourages people to withdraw any sort of donation to us.
Yeah, so we wouldn't want to bring that up.
No.
You know, this is sort of like the tagline of the film Alien. In space, nobody can hear you try to get people to donate to your podcast.
Now, and on a clip show podcast, that's doubly true.
If there was anybody to even say this to, which there isn't, I would say we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and also an episode of The Greatest Generation. But since nobody's listening, that's really an act of utter futility. So I'll just say good night, Adam.
Speaking of acts of utter futility, that was this episode of our show. Good luck with the edit.
Oh my God, so fucking long right now.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.